Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I am Branham. It is Brian behind the glass, and it is Bregman on the mend. Hopefully he's on the mend. Who knows what the deal is with Alex Bregman. News dropping 15 minutes ago. Alex Bregman is out of the lineup today due to some swelling in the back of his right elbow. Bregman will be available in the Astros clubhouse this afternoon at 3:10. So this could be very, very, very bad. This could be not that bad. This could be Alex Bregman saying goodbye to Houston and putting on a Scott Boras hat. I don't know what to expect.
Alex Bregman played
in the next
his last
8 minutes.
Game in Houston.
Yeah, what do we expect? I mean, I have no idea what to expect with in the next 8 minutes. And the way that the Astros handle things, I have no clue if I'm going to believe it.
Yeah, I mean, I know that everybody now is on pins and needles, and with good reason, because we're not going to get any information until he actually does speak. But you wondered when you heard the news this morning that Shea Whitcomb was being called up. It's like, well, the corresponding move has to be Aledmys Diaz, and yet no move was made. And now it makes you start wondering if that isn't related to what's going on right now, but it's not the news anybody wanted to hear because he's been on a heater, too.
Yeah, he's been red hot. He's been red hot, and then all of a sudden he's hurt. So, I mean, everything that we're just going to predict right now is speculation. We'll know more in the next 7 minutes. A lot of people are reading too much into the Astros. Like, he's going to meet with the media in the Astros clubhouse. People are always throwing, he's announcing a press conference. It's not a press conference. He's going to be talking to the media outside his locker. Now, that doesn't mean that the worst news isn't possible. It could still very much be possible. It could also be, hey, I want to be very transparent with the media about my elbow. I'm going to talk to the media. It's sore. Maybe it is hurt. Maybe he's going to be limited to DH duty. We don't know. Like, we don't know a whole lot other than Shea Whitcomb has been promoted. A corresponding move has not been made. So we don't even know if Bregman's going on the injured list. And Alex Bregman is out of the lineup tonight due to swelling in the back of his right elbow. That's the only facts we know. That's the only facts we know.
We don't know what we don't know, but obviously everybody's first reaction is, oh, bleep, this is the worst thing that could have happened because he's on fire, they're on fire, you know, and this is not what you needed. But if it's one game and he just comes out and says, hey, my elbow was a little sore, they decided to give me the night off, you understand they're playing the White Sox. You should be okay giving him the night off. And let's hope that it's nothing.
Yeah, see, I just can't believe that it's that. I can't believe that it is that minuscule because I don't think that you put in the game notes. Medical update, Bregman is out of the lineup today due to some swelling in the back of his right elbow and that Bregman will be available to talk to the media. Like, it's not as simple as, oh, it's sore, he'll be back in the lineup tomorrow if you're doing all of that. I don't think.
Okay. I mean, I think one thing we figured out is their releases and their media, you're probably right, but I'm just saying they're unpredictable, so I don't know what they're thinking. I hope it's nothing, but man, it's obviously something that everybody's talking about.
They are unpredictable, but have they ever been unpredictable to good news? Like, and that's kind of the thing. Like, I agree with you that they're unpredictable. I agree with you that they're vague. I agree with you that they try to cover things up. But when have they ever done that stuff and the news is positive? I can't think
of one. It's a good point.
I can't think of one time that has happened.
Can't think of one time.
Chris from Sam Houston in the Twitch saying, what a terrible way to start the show. I agree. We didn't want to do this.
No.
We weren't going to do this, but it is the topic of the city right now. And it does kind of, it really is a microcosm of the Houston Astros season. Like, this has been a tough season. The Astros are comfortably in first place right now. I shouldn't say comfortably, but they're a few games in first place right now. The biggest lead that they've had all season, and it's like, good. You finally got out of this grind of what has been a season that's been riddled by injury. Terrible start to the year. 10 games back, however many games under 500. The bottom of the order being just an absolute black hole at times. The injuries to the starting rotation. reaction. Kyle Tucker having the worst bone bruise known to man. And then it's like, okay, now we can rest easy. You kick back on the recliner a little bit. You get a cigar out. Maybe you get your favorite drink. Gentle Ben is mine. You're like, okay, we're comfortable. We're three games up in first place. We got the White Sox coming to town. Our pitching staff's been one of the best pitching staffs in all of baseball. Verlander's coming back. Looked good in the rehab yesterday. So it's like all these positive vibes, all of this good energy, all of these good feels. Boom! Alex Bregman has elbow soreness. You can't get comfortable if you're an Astro fan in 2024.
You just can't. I mean, it's just the expect the unexpected yet again. But again, when you were talking just now, and I was thinking about it, going, well, if they're saying that it's swelling in the back of the elbow, this will probably correlate it to be something major with a leg injury, because the neck injury turned into Tommy John, and because a lot of times the most random of other injuries turn into something major somewhere else. Let's hope not, and let's hope in a few minutes we find out that it's just he needs to take a couple days off, because you're right. I mean, as bad as it's been trying to predict what this team's going to do and the outcomes that they're going to experience and how this team's going to perform, right now it hasn't been this good all season long. And now with a three-game lead in the division and the way everybody's starting to come together offensively, you'd hope that this is the start of them playing the way they were supposed to play all year long.
The only problem with that hope, and I share the same hope that we find out it's, hey, he takes the weekend off and he's back next week, but I'll be with you this with Kyle Tucker in June. Like, even if they tell us, oh, it's no big deal, he's back in 3 days, would we believe him?
No.
That's the problem. So I don't think they could tell us anything in this press conference other than literally nothing's wrong, which obviously they can't tell us, that we would believe and feel good about.
Oh, they always oversell the injury. They never undersell the injury. It's always, he'll miss one turn through the rotation. All of a sudden, it's 3, 4, 7 season long. Kyle Tucker with the bone bruise. Oh, we're not even sure that he's going to miss 10 games, so we're going to not put him on the injured list, and then 4 or 5 days later, they do. That evolves to a 10-day IL, which then evolves to a 60-day IL. So that's what I'm saying. Like, they're always vague. They're always very difficult to understand. It never comes out where it's a good news vagueness or good news whatever. It's always something that usually lingers around and takes longer than what they kind of expect you to take it.
Yeah, the lack of the corresponding move has me greatly concerned, just simply because it's a no-brainer to just say Aledmys Díaz is no longer on the big league roster and we roll. We go forward. We're good. But the fact that they didn't do it, and then you still wouldn't be really losing any sleep because you figure before the game or at some point prior to the game, they'll announce the corresponding move. But now this happens before the media availabilities and everything else, and now it really leaves you to start thinking about the what-ifs and how big of an issue this could be, and you just hope it's nothing too big.
Yeah, it almost feels like they're waiting on a corresponding move for Bregman to talk to the media. Like, because people, they like to do that. That's why managers don't make, like, that's why they're never ones to be like, oh, yeah, this guy's coming up tomorrow, because that means somebody's going away and they don't ever want to, like, deliver that news yet. So, like, they'll be very coy, even if it's reported that a guy's coming up. Well, we haven't made that official yet. Why do they do that? Because they want to have the conversation to the guy that they're sending down, releasing, DFAing, whatever. It's kind of the same deal here. Like, to me, it feels like they're giving Bregman the respect to allow him to say his story before they make the corresponding move of Alex Bregman to the injured list. Not to say it's a severe injury, but Alex Bregman to the injured list.
And it also helps them a great deal, too, because the when they're trying to script it and to try to say things and the way they've been through things in the past, let this player speak first, and then they can give you the exact medical diagnosis.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my read on it. I believe that they're waiting for Bregman to talk. I think the corresponding move is going to be Bregman to the injured list. And it's not great with the right elbow tightness. We know that, especially with pitchers. It's not as, I mean, it's still very, like, critical for a position player, but not as critical for a position player. You know, I'm just thinking, like, whatever the injury could be, I don't want to speculate. Maybe it's a situation where he can kind of get better in a couple of weeks. The elbow feels good enough to hit, but maybe he doesn't play defense. Like, I wonder if that's going to be a possibility, too.
That would be the biggest worried, concerned, worst-case scenario possibilities, the fact that he could still hit, that would be ideal. Yeah, it would be challenging because that DH spot between Yordan and Yiner seems to be a good lock to keep an extra bat in the lineup, and you don't have to look for spots for those guys for Yiner to play. But at the same time, he's been on such a heater, you hate to lose him offensively, even though you know you're going to lose something no matter who fills in for him at third base defensively. But at least being able to keep that bat in the lineup with as hot as he's been would be key.
Astros lineup is out, which, as we know, does not have Alex Bregman in it. Do you want to guess who's getting the start at third base?
I would say DeCenzo.
Nope.
It's Whitcomb?
Nope.
Then it's got to be Dubon.
It's Mauricio Dubon. Mauricio Dubon gets to start at third base.
Wow.
Welcome to the big club, Wickham. You get a dose of sitting on the pine. Altuve, Yordan, Yiner. Yiner's DHing. Peña, Caratini, Myers, DeCenzo, Dubon, McCormick. DeCenzo's playing first base. So that's the that is the post-Alex Bregman lineup number one. Chaz in right field, which I hate for two reasons. One, he's awful offensively, and then two, he's got a noodle of an arm, and I hate my right fielders that have noodles of an arm. DeCenzo, I mean, you have a tough lefty on the mound with Crochet, yeah. So that explains Singleton not being in the lineup, although Crochet's splits are pretty even, but they don't like Singleton against lefties. They've made that known a lot.
Yeah, this is the worst way to start a series. You're supposed to just kind of, you know, take the White Sox and do what you're supposed to do with them and keep rolling after winning eight straight. This is not the way you start this homestand.
Yeah, I'd like to see DeCenzo play a little bit third just to see what he's got.
I kind of
like
did
the 2025
too.
Look a little early. 9229, the whole key to the Bregman situation is exactly what y'all mentioned. No corresponding move yet. Do you think we'll be tired by the time the playoffs come? We've been fighting all season to get where we're at. Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, you grind so much, that whether it's a season, whether it's a game. Sometimes you can come up a little bit short at the end of it. Now, I mean, if you're looking at it from a, you know, optimistic perspective, there's still a good chunk of the season left. The Astros have built, you know, a multi-game lead here. Maybe they could extend that lead and you can have the luxury of perhaps getting, you know, a little bit more rested and get rid of the fatigue. So there is still some time to worry about that. You know, there's not five games left of the season where all of a sudden the season ends next week and you have to worry about fatigue. Like, there's still a chance to extend the lead in the division and start to worry about that a little
bit. Yeah, the big thing is you can, if Verlander is as close as it looks like he might be, then you can go to the six-man rotation and give your pitchers a little extra break so that you can avoid some of that. Offensively, it's a more difficult scenario, and depending what the outcome here is with Bregman, it gets even more difficult. They just snapped out of it in the last two series offensively, and you know that you need all hands on deck. That's the one that might get a little dicey.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're going to monitor this Bregman news. If anything breaks during the commercial break, we'll be the first ones to let you know. We're going to react to it as well if there is any news on the Alex Bregman situation. Especially, he's supposed to be meeting with the media right now, but maybe he's late. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Todd Callis will join us later in the show. DJ Bianimate will join us later in the show. Who said it? Car wreck of the day, which, of course, on Fridays, all the mean things you said to us. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, on YouTube, ESPN Houston, on Twitter, ESPN975. Pac-Man Joel is Blankers there. Sagged by BMAC is Brian. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
ESPN975. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. To see if
I still... Brian's too soon.
Yeah, I think it is too.
No, I'm in mourning. I'm sorry.
I don't even know what's happening.
I'm processing my grief. You guys can process your own grief on your own time. I'm processing it now.
This is creating more grief for me thinking about the fact that it may be ominously bad.
Alex Bregman plays last day for the Astros.
This is
713.
I do love this song.
It's a good song.
And the Johnny Cash rendition is unbelievable how good this is. It gets me in my feels. So good. It's been a tough day for me, too. I had an emergency trip to the dentist for Branham, baby. He rolled off the couch. His tooth went into his gum. It has to be stuck there for a week.
Yikes.
And now Bregman news.
Can they, like, hip surgery?
It looks like they're going to have to extract it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, pretty rough that's injury. Terrible. And he's acting like nothing happened.
Well, that's at least a good part. That he's not
kids know sell everything.
I'm not sure if he's tough or stupid. Like, I really don't know. All right, we're waiting on the Bregman news. We don't know yet. 713-780-3776. He was scheduled to meet with the media at 3:10. We have not seen reports yet. I'm sure they're all champing at the bit, I should say.
Who's got the quickest fingers? Who
gets I'm sure they're all champing at the bit. John Heyman, this is Elias Diaz got outright released. He cleared waivers and got outright released, which is interesting. I thought somebody would claim him, but apparently not. Still waiting on Amid Rosario's use. Well, he got it. Good news, bad news.
All right, I'm reading this live for the first time from Matt Young from the Chronicle. Alex Bregman says he had an MRI that revealed no damage to his elbow. He thinks he slept on it wrong. He expects to miss just a few days and be back in the lineup.
He's out. That's it.
Career. That's the news.
That's it.
That's it.
You know what? I would be breathing easy.
So that means he's having Tommy John surgery in a few days.
I would be breathing easy if we did not just go through and are still going through the Kyle Tucker situation when he was supposed to be back in a couple of days on the road trip in Anaheim.
This is like the biggest buildup for this.
Yeah, this is a popcorn fart for as far as news goes. I mean, it's good if you believe it, but like we talked about in the first segment, no one believes it. Does anyone believe this?
I mean, it's good news based on what we were expecting to hear, but no, we don't believe it, and we will believe this to be true when Alex Bregman returns to the lineup.
Exactly.
Of the news we were kind of preparing ourselves to hear, this is positive.
This is the sad state of affairs.
Slept where
we
wrong?
Are. Yes.
Really?
It could be a pillow, and then it could be worse than that because the pillow turns into Tommy John.
All this for sleeping on it wrong.
They need a sleep doctor. They really do. The Rockets had one. You need a sleep doctor because what was it that Javier started with?
Slept on a bad pillow, right?
Did Javier ever say that?
They said it was a pillow.
I thought it came out.
I never heard it was a pillow. I think we were just making fun of that.
No, I thought
it was slept wrong. I don't think a pillow was ever involved.
Either way, it's sleep, though. I mean, same thing with Bregman.
But I don't think they were blaming it on a pillow.
Well, that part, I don't know.
Like, I think we took liberty with that.
I thought someone tweeted it out.
I think it was us. I think that we took liberty of that. I mean, you are sleeping with a pillow. But, I mean, is it the pillow or is it the way that you fell asleep? Is it the way that you're laying down? But, so Bregman not in the lineup today. The club issues a pressure. Maybe this is their way of being transparent now. Of like, hey, this is not – you're not going to see him in the lineup today. We're going to have him talk to the media. And then he's going to explain what happened. And because of the Astros' history and the precedents that they have set, it's like, okay, we're expecting Tommy John. But to Brian's point, because of the precedents that they've set, Verlander is only going to miss a start or two. Framber Valdez only a start turns into two. Christian Javier sleeps on his neck funny and then needs Tommy John right whenever he returns, and then he was throwing like 88 miles per hour. The precedents that the Astros have also set is that even whenever they kind of give information on an injury, that a lot of times it can be greater than then.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing about this. You can't take this. It's the most positive news you could possibly ask for with as much panic was going on in this city when we heard the news. But you can't even take it seriously enough to kind of breathe easily because of the past precedents that they have set.
Well, even just in what they actually reported, like, because in what they're reporting, I mean, this is straight from the horse's mouth, Alex Bregman himself. He says he had an MRI to see if there was structural damage from sleep. Like, I could look, we've all woken up with, you know, back pain or some other pain from sleeping wrong, but to get to the point of an MRI for structural damage when you think all that happened is you slept on it wrong, it doesn't pass the smell test to me.
I mean, that's due diligence.
Is it?
I think so, yeah.
The word structural damage?
I'm a big believer in doing imaging anytime that anything comes up. I'm a huge believer, because I'm a believer in information. I'm a believer in data. Yeah, if anything comes up where it's sore, and you're a Major League Baseball organization, I'm a huge believer in just finding out and getting imaging done. A lot of times it might uncover an injury that might have already been there.
Okay, that's a good
point. So I'm a huge fan of just go ahead, get the imaging done.
My initial reaction when you and Brian were talking was, well, wait a minute. Why, if you just slept wrong, would you be getting the MRI this soon unless it was something more major? If it just happened, like if you just woke up and headed to the ballpark and it was bad. But then McTaggart clears it up and said he slept wrong a few days ago and doesn't want to play through it anymore. He expects to miss the weekend. Said it's not a long-term injury.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Well, I mean, again, to Brian's point, we'll wait and see. But yes, of the information we could currently see today, this is good news. And it's probably, you know, if this was the Mariners coming into town, Would he miss all three games if it were the Mariners versus the White Sox? Like, I wonder how much that comes into play. Rome says that Alex Bregman said he MRI that showed no structural damage in his elbow. He doesn't think he'll play this weekend, but there are no long-term ramifications. Ocho says, good point by BMAC. We're not going to believe anything the Astros report given their recent history. Also, why is there an immediate presser for Bregman when we haven't heard much about Tucker for months? Weird. Here's my theory on this, and here's my theory as to why this is, like, good news. I think Bregman's very aware of the reputation of the club. He's very aware of the reputation of the PR and how people digest the information that is given by the Astros. So I think Alex Bregman here wanted to speak for Alex Bregman and take it out of the hands of the PR so you hear it from his voice. I think this is Alex Bregman like, hey, guys, this isn't the Astros telling you this, and I know that their history is a little bit shaky. It's a little bit dicey. This is me, Alex Bregman, telling you this information about my body, and I want to be very clear and transparent with you. There's that motive for Bregman. There's also the motive of Bregman that he's a free agent in a month and a half. So I think that Bregman wanted to take this out of the hands of the Astros PR, let everybody know, hey, this is me telling you I'm good, but then also letting all of the teams in baseball know that this is not long term. This is just a hiccup. I'm going to be back next week. I'm good old Alex Bregman that's red hot, and somebody pay me $300 million in the offseason.
That's the biggest thing. You got to protect your own deal when you're looking to get a new deal. I think that's, you're right on both fronts, but I think that's the biggest one too, is the fact that let me set the record straight right here and now so people don't think I'm damaged goods if I hit the open market.
Yeah, I am going to be optimistic about this. Someone's saying, well, why hasn't Tucker talked? That's the player. Like, the player gets to decide this. If the player comes to PR and says, hey, I want to talk, they're going to let the guy talk. And plus, there's open clubhouse. Like, you don't have to talk to the media when they're in there, but you can. You can if you want to. And Alex Bregman here, I think, wants to be transparent. He wants to be clear for a couple of different motives. One, financially, and then one, because he doesn't want the Astros to screw up his own injury diagnosis. Kyle Tucker was probably in a lot of pain, and he knew he was going to be pretty long-term, and he didn't want to talk. 713-780-3776. HRMP listener line 409, Josh. Whatever Bregman says should be more believable than what the team would say if he didn't speak right. Yes, mm-hmm. I do. I think that's why Bregman chose to speak. This one's saying the whole first base thing. I don't know if we're going to have to worry about that. 9392, isn't the back of the elbow the front since the elbow is already in the back? Come on, man. It's Friday. Don't make me think.
Jeez, that's complex.
3772, you hear about a Super Bowl hangover in the NFL, which means that the players are worn out from last year's game and they have nagging injuries for the entire next season. Is that what's happening to the Astros?
I don't think so. Look, I mean, they've had more than their fair share of injuries all season long. I think that, you know, we know injuries happen. They've had a boatload of them. But, yeah, this is just something. This is because he's so significant and he's so hot right now and where he hits in the lineup and all the things that he does. This is as major as Tucker. I mean, same thing, kind of thing as a Tucker. And it's something that we have to be concerned with. I'm glad it came out like this.
Yeah.
I'm not going
to
rest easy.
No, this speaks to Brian's point. Like, the Astros have earned the reputation for us not to take them at their word. Now, the good news is that it was Bregman that was delivering the message and not the Astros, which I do take some solace in. Now, I'm not going to just completely buy in. Like, I'm not going to go all in and just trust everything he's saying. I am, because the Astros have conditioned me this way, am fundamentally not going to believe it until Alex Bregman is in the lineup. Secondly, now we got to see the corresponding move for Shea Whitcomb. Like, if Bregman's saying that he's going to miss this weekend, but he's not saying it's long term, we're talking about a 10-day injured list. Like, where is the middle here? Are the Astros going to place him on the 10-day IL anyways? Is he only going to miss the three games but still take a roster spot? Like, now we need to see the corresponding move. Even if Bregman feels like he could be back next week, I'm in favor of just placing him on the 10-day IL. I always err on the side of 10-day IL. I always err on the side of too many days off. Dusty Baker taught me that, I guess. Mm-hmm. Whenever they're 100%, give him one day more. If Bregman's already telling you that he's going to miss three games this week, the Astros had the day off yesterday, so you can retroactive this to yesterday. You could get through the weekend 4 days. He could be back next week whenever the 10-day IL is up. If I'm the Astros, and even if Alex Bregman's like, hey, I don't need the IL, I'm putting him on the IL for the sake of Alex Bregman, for the sake of him not rushing back in the lineup, because he doesn't want to be on the bench for longer than what an injured list stint would have been. Like, I'm just placing him on the IL no matter what, even if he's completely healthy by the end of those 10 days.
It just concerns me, Jeremy, that after you're done with the White Sox, you know, the schedule kind of gets tough again. And that with as weak as their lineup has been all year, that I think that they're probably hoping that they can get him back in by the time the Red Sox and the Dodgers and those series come up. so that maybe they don't want to do the 10-day IL. Because, look, you need him right. You can't have him playing at 70%.
The danger with that is he tries to hurry up and come back, and it's a nagging injury all year long. Like, you're three games up in the division right now. You're 65-55. You've played 120 games. You have 42 games left. 10-day IL, come back 100%, and you're good the rest of the way. I'm putting him on the 10-day IL. Like, you're three games up in the division. I think that you're good enough to make it through a difficult part of the schedule for just 10 days. I mean, we're not talking about 2 weeks here, especially now that you've built a three-game lead. Like, because, again, you could retroactive this to yesterday. So 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th. You can get to the 21st, that's 7 days, through the Orioles Saturday, 24th. He could be back by the Philadelphia series on the 26th.
Yeah, I mean, that's best case scenario of if you actually have to do it. I hope that they just think that, hey, this is the White Sox series. This is the time to do it. Hopefully by Monday he's good. We don't have to do that. But you're right. I mean, we're going to learn a lot by the corresponding move. I think that's going to tell us.
I don't know. Like, what? Tell us in what regard?
Well, I think that if they just go ahead and just do something with Diaz, then I think that they think that Bregman, it really is nothing serious, and he's going to be okay. But I think that if you see that Bregman's going to, they're going to put him on the IL, and that's the corresponding move, then you do realize, hey, this is, even though he says that they want to be at the utmost precaution with this, and they're going to wait till he's as close to 100%.
Yeah. I don't know how much the Diaz move really matters. Because you could make sense of Aledmys Diaz being DFA no matter what. Like, no matter what, you can make sense of Aledmys Diaz being DFA today if there was zero Alex Bregman conversation.
Yeah, and I just think that, you know, you're not going to do that if you think that Diaz is a guy that you might rely on in some way, shape, or form while Bregman's out. But if you're going to put Bregman on the IL immediately, then I think that tells you that maybe you need Diaz. But with Whitcomb and with DeCenzo, I don't know how you need Diaz regardless.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, they haven't used Aledmys Diaz since, what, mid-July?
Since the first base game, I think, right?
He must have a great personality. I think Aledmys Diaz has a great personality. 713-780-3776, 5658, leading in with Johnny Cash hurt, was not okay. It wasn't okay. Elbow swelling from sleeping on it wrong, ? 8437. Yeah, how much are you buying that?
I think it's probably something that has nothing to do with sleeping at all. I think that he probably either threw a ball at one point or something triggered something, and that he's been feeling this for a while, and I don't associate it with sleeping on it.
I've woken up with some really bad sore necks.
Oh, yeah.
A crick in my neck.
Yeah.
I've had one crick in my neck that lasted like 3-4 weeks. Like, I fell asleep I fell asleep on the side of the couch like at a 90-degree angle, and it lingered for 3 to 4 weeks. I have never woken up in my entire life, and I'm incredibly out of shape. Like, if anybody knows about waking up with body aches, it'd be Branham. Branham would be an expert on waking up with body aches. I've never woken up with an elbow being sore.
I have, but I kind of split the difference here. Like, I think this could be, he did wake up with elbow pain, but I think it could be something where he did something to, you know, injure, inflame it, cause something to happen in his elbow. But some of the times when you hurt yourself, you know, you always think about, oh, wait, I'm going to be sore tomorrow. It could be one of those things where he did something to aggravate the elbow, and it didn't really show up until he woke up the next day. But
that wouldn't be sleeping wrong.
See, I think.
I know, but it would be, it'd be waking up with elbow pain, but it wouldn't be sleeping on it wrong. Yeah. And maybe that's just lost in translation or getting confused
because
here.
I've fallen asleep on my arm. I think we've all been there, yeah, but it's like, yeah, you know, the numbness, it feels like the pin needles on your hand, and then it's gone in 10 minutes.
Ironically, Esme, our receptionist today, said, I think I slept funny because my arm is sore today. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. If I slept wrong, it's my shoulder. Most of the time, it's my neck, but it's only a couple of days. I think he did something. I think whether it's swinging or throwing, he felt something. And this is just their easiest way to kind of sum it up.
This is so weird. This is so weird. I'm going to start blaming every single one of my injuries to sleeping on it. Like, I got knee pain. I slept on it funny. I got head pain. I slept on it funny. I got abdomen pain. I slept on it funny. Everything's going to be, I slept on it funny.
Yeah.
I got a hernia. I slept on it funny.
It's quite possible. You might need Tommy John surgery.
713-780-3776. HRMP listener line. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Robbie in Dayton. You're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Robbie?
Hey, how you doing today, man? I can't believe I got on so dang quick.
Well, we like
okay,
you,
Rob. So, let's keep it moving.
You're a fan
I want to talk about my elbows hurting. You know, when I drink too many gentleman beers, I end up banging on the walls going down the hallway.
You're doing what to the wall?
Elbow pains.
What are you doing to the wall? What are you doing to the wall, Robbie?
I am banging off the wall.
Oh, off the wall. I got you.
I'm hitting both sides of the wall when I'm going down the hallway.
All right, Rob. Appreciate the
I'm
plug.
Just saying.
Appreciate
too many gentlemen bins.
Yeah, gentle bin. But yeah, it's okay.
I'm a dog.
We can tell that you've had a little bit too many of them if you're calling gentlemen bins. Robbie is a dog.
He's
we love you, Robbie.
Obviously a human pinball bouncing off the wall.
And he likes those gentle bins.
Down the hallway.
Blaine, I have fell asleep where I slept on my arm opened up, palm up, hanging off the side of my bed. Pain was bad for like 3 days in my elbow. So, Blaine, telling us what Bregman's up to. Keith from L.A., tell Alex Bregman to stop trying to outlift blankers in the gym. There's that. And then 5199, I have tennis elbow from walking a 100-pound puppy. I don't think Bregman's walking a 100-pound puppy, though.
No. No. I think the worst that I've had is you fall asleep. Like, my daughters have a small little couch in their room. And a lot of times when I'm sitting in there, when I'm putting them to bed, I'll fall asleep in there. And if I fall asleep with my head propped up on that little couch, yeah, 3 days max, I'm dealing with it. But yeah, it's...
Yeah. Okay, so Bregman, not in the lineup today. He's got a sore elbow. Not in the lineup. He has not been placed on the injured list yet. The Astros do have to make a corresponding move for Shea Whitcomb. Maybe it is an IL stint. Maybe it's Aledmys Diaz being DFA'd. Maybe it's Chaz McCormick being optioned so he can work on his swing. Maybe it's Pedro Leon being optioned. We'll wait and hear the news. We'll let you know whenever we find out. It'll be interesting to see what that news is. But I think we've talked everything about Bregman, right? Is there anything that we didn't mention about Bregman being hurt? I don't think that there's anything else. I don't think there's
think
anything else here.
The pertinent information is what came out of the press conference, and then we just wait to see how long it takes.
Media availability.
Oh, that's right. Media availability. And now we're still waiting on the corresponding move.
Still waiting on the corresponding move. But, yeah, I mean, this lineup is going to miss Bregman. But I think that the defense is going to be the thing that we notice the most.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that they're going to Dubon at third base.
Trust in Dubon.
Okay.
You said he earned the burn yesterday.
He did earn the burn from an outfield position with what they have to choose from. I don't think that he earned the burn for third base.
Give me a Med Rosario today. All right, 713-780-3776. HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. You know what this is, actually? This was the Astros burying the batter's eye. This was the Astros burying the new batter's eye that is now painted darker today. I bet you that's what it is. Hey, Bregman, could you do us a solid? Could you pretend like your elbow hurts so we don't have to talk about this batter's eye in center field? That's my theory. All right, 713-780-3776. The Texans have about a little over $20 million in cap space. Should we be critical of the Texans for not spending a majority of the cap space that they have left? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, a minute here for Allstate Siding and Windows. You got to stop looking all over Houston and figure out that the best place to go for siding and windows is Allstate. They've been in Houston for almost 50 years. They take care of you in so many ways because they love being in Houston and taking care of Houstonians. And they're doing it all right now yet again. I did it. I called them. I wanted new windows on my house. I asked the experts. I called Mary. Her brother came over and gave me the free estimate, talked me through what I needed, what products I should consider choosing from. And once we did it, we could not be happier because, one, the curb appeal makes the house look more modern and upgrades the appearance of the house on a daily basis. But more importantly, the energy bills have gone way down up to 30 to 40%. And the fact is they're tough. They're going to withstand hurricane season and the winters and the hot summers. It's absolutely phenomenal. They're the best in the business. They want to take care of you, too. 30% off all window jobs right now. $2,500 off complete siding jobs. And those free estimates, they're available for everyone. All you've got to do is call them. 832-204-1936. 832-204-1936. Have them come to you and tell you what they can do for you. Siding, windows, both, one or the other. They'll walk you through, tell you the products to choose from. Just like they did for me, they are here to help you. You can check out all their products and the services, allstatesidingandwindows.com. But I'm telling you, call them up, have them come out and give the free estimate. It costs you nothing, and it could be a game changer for you and your biggest investment, your house.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're just going to do this all day?
We'll
safer.
We'll see. Is the thread and
faith. Well, not at 4:45. We have to send it. Like
you do it with Todd Callis. Just...
I don't know if Todd would be in on the joke.
I don't know either. But yeah, I think he'd probably be puzzled.
Did you hear Todd Callis talking about how he'd been working out with Jeremy Pena in the hotel gym?
Yeah, I did.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they were all
with Jeremy. Is lifting with Pena?
Well, he wasn't lifting with Pena. He was in there, and then Pena walked in, and TK said he got out there immediately. He said he want to be in the I guess
you didn't want to be shamed by a professional athlete working out next to him.
He didn't want to be in the clouds of those humongous biceps that Jeremy Pena possesses.
Yeah, Blummer. They were both up, and Blummer said that he felt like he was sore enough that he didn't even want to be in there. And then Pena's playing all these games, and it's still in there working out, and he felt guilty.
Yeah. All right. 713-780-3776. 2565, Breggy strained his elbow carrying the enormous wheelbarrow that he carries his in.
Mm. Yeah, it's from a South Park episode.
Oh, Bregman was in a South Park episode?
No, there's an episode where someone has to wheel around their giant.
There's a guy on Twitter that, like, I think his Twitter name is Bregman's Wheelbarrow, and he, like, the picture is the South Park character. Mm. Maybe face,
yeah, Randy Marsh.
Maybe face-mashed with Bregman. I never got into South Park.
I
huge,
didn't either.
Not a huge cartoon
I could have guessed
guy.
That one.
And yeah, not a big well,
yeah, yeah, I could have guessed on Joel.
Yeah, I know that was coming.
Not a huge cartoon guy. All right, so the Houston Texans are just over $20 million over the salary cap, or under the salary cap. They have just over $20 million still left to spend, $20.78 million according to over the cap. Now, we saw that they were interested in Matthew Judon, which Judon probably is going to want a contract extension. They were not interested in Justin Simmons for $8 million, $7.5 million guaranteed. The Houston Texans have acted as a win-now organization, and we've talked about how critical it is to act that way whenever you have a quarterback on his rookie contract. Quarterbacks since 2011 on their first big deal usually don't lead to championships unless your name is Patrick Mahomes. Now, they brought in Danielle Hunter. They made the trade for Stephon Diggs, traded what will be a high second-round pick for Stephon Diggs. They traded for Joe Mixon, didn't give up a lot of draft capital to do that, but then signed him to a contract extension, DeNico Autry. All the offseason moves the Houston Texans have made. And they've been splashy. They've been big. They have been aggressive. It is surprising that they still have $20.7 million left to spend, and they're operating as a win now. Should we be critical of the Texans for not spending a majority of the cap space that they have remaining?
My opinion is no, and that's because we haven't even gotten to week one of the season yet. I think that I'm fine with the fact that they have money to play with. I've talked about the fact that I still think they may still be in the market for running back number two, but regardless, whether it's running back, linebacker help, they have the ability, when Caserio had the quote early when camp started about the fact that they're watching things every day, monitoring the other team, seeing who's out there. I think that I'm okay with it right now because I think that we know that with injuries happening and also really kind of focusing on positions of need, they can still do what they need to do and cover their butts if an injury happens or something other as well. So I'm going to say no now. Now, if we're having this conversation, you know, as we get deeper into the season, then I would be a little bit more concerned.
Yeah, so your line right of demarcations, now. Like in season, like week three, week four,
into like if we're 6 weeks in, and you know, and I still think you need some kind of wiggle room because injuries happen at any time. But if we're 6 weeks in and we're still sitting on that big of a number or number close to that, I'd be a little more concerned.
Okay, my thought on this is interesting. We criticize in this city, not us, we criticize in the city Crane's frugalness. Like, people talk about this all the time. Like, I still see people right now talk about how cheap Jim Crane is. Yeah, Jim Crane is in the luxury tax. Jim Crane is paying the luxury tax this season, and in the last few off seasons has been a spender. Josh Hader has signed him to the most money a closer has ever signed. I think it was
average. Yeah,
no, I think it was total.
Total,
I think it was total.
And then the Mets closer has the average.
Yeah, I think he
average,
makes $20 million. I think Hader was the biggest total ever given to a closer. Jose Abreu was the biggest contract given to a first baseman that offseason. Rafael Montero reset the relief pitcher market to the point that relief pitchers weren't signing until late in the offseason because they screwed it up with Rafael Montero for the rest of the league. So Crane has been willing to spend, yet Jim Crane is still criticized for his frugalness despite being over the luxury tax. Whereas all of a sudden, the Texans are trending in the right way. They're cool. They're hip. C.J. Stroud, awesome. We all love D'Amico Ryans. Kyle McNair has turned into a buffoon, into Cool Cat Cal. But he's $20.8 million under the salary cap whenever you have a team that's ready to win that has AFC championship aspirations. So I find the irony there hypocritical. Quite frankly, I find it hypocritical that Crane gets bashed and Cal's like gets this free pass because they're hip and cool and whatever.
Never quit.
Unless he's talking about spending under the cap space money. Now, I don't think that the moves that you made suggest big spending. Like guys who are getting cut, guys who are getting moved and trimmed off of 53-man rosters, I don't think that's going to be a high price of spending. I do believe that you need to leave a good amount in the kitty. That way you can make moves through the season. That costs money. I think it's wise to leave money in the kitty in case you're in the race and you make a trade at the trade deadline. I'm not critical of the Texans for not spending the money. I'm not going to say they're refusing to spend it, for not spending it. Because in the NFL, you can carry up to 100% over to the next year. You can roll over cap savings to the following year. If you couldn't do that in the NFL, I would be crushing the Houston Texans. But I like this roster. I don't think that there are players out there that could make this roster a lot better, although I would say Justin Simmons is the exception to that rule. I would have liked them to sign Justin Simmons with the $20.7 million that you can spend. And there's also ways to kind of capologist that, too. Cut Robert Woods, who's not a necessity on this team. That saves you $5 million. And now a Justin Simmons $8 million contract really turns into a net three. So I would have liked the Justin Simmons deal, so I would say that's the exception. I'm good with the Texans being $20.7 million under the cap for the variety of reasons that you mentioned, so they can make a big move in season. Maybe there's an injury. And then if none of that stuff happens, because the NFL has the 100% rollover, you can roll it over to next season. I think that's good for a team that, again, will hope to be contending, and you could be active in the offseason yet again.
No, and I think the other thing, the other name I would throw out there, Jeremy, because you know that I was banging the drum for Simmons. Right now, you look like you're in a good spot with corner two. But if Steph Gilmore is still out there and you get closer to the start of the season and he's looking for a little bit more money, a guy like that is something you could open up to. Or like you were saying, like once you get into the season or if you need a veteran or if there's guys out there where it seems like if you can take on a little extra salary, it can really put a Band-Aid on what you got going on.
I think he might be the only guy that's like fits into that mold, though.
Maybe. Like, I mean, I'm thinking linebackers, and off the top of my head, I can't think of – that would be where I think a guy's already on someone's roster and is a cap casualty because of expense.
I looked at the remaining linebackers 2 weeks ago, and, like, none of the names did anything for me. So, yeah, I don't think that there's that guy. Look, there's not a linebacker equivalent to Gilmore that exists. Brian, you look like you had something you wanted to say.
I was fine with the Texans not spending the remaining cap until we got the news on Justin Simmons only being $8 million for 1 year. That was kind of the point where I was in my own head signing off on Caserio, like, okay, they're not using this extra cap space, but I feel like they're pretty good most places. And the places where they're a little weak, I don't really see anyone worth signing. Where I do take some exception and change my tune a little bit is Justin Simmons. Like, if they sign Simmons here, now you don't have to worry about a Jimmy Ward injury. You don't have to worry about relying on a third-round rookie. You know, things fall together, and I feel great about this roster. I mean, I already do feel great about this roster, but I'd feel even more sure about it. It's just that one decision to pass on Justin Simmons when you have a need, and it was a one-year deal that I don't feel great about.
And I don't think that, again, I don't know if there's any situations like that that are out there, but we heard that they were involved in Judon. But if there was a linebacker under that same mold where a linebacker looking for more money or making too much money and you could just give up a pick and then add that salary to your roster and you make yourself that much better, then I'm good that they have the flexibility to do that.
The NFL makes it really easy to like chill with your money, like chill with your salary cap savings. Because if you have the option of rolling over 100% of your cap savings, then yeah, like save $20 million. In the kitty. If a player becomes available that's going to cost you a little money, you have the opportunity to strike, whereas a lot of teams aren't because they're not going to be under the salary cap or they're not going to have as much cap space as perhaps the Texans do. You get to the trade deadline. Maybe there's a financial cost of a certain player. There's a team that's not performing well, and now they want to just clear a little bit of salary. So with Justin Simmons being the exception, I actually like that the Texans have been able to save nearly $21 million. They can be ready to strike if the opportunity presents itself. And then if none of that happens and they're sitting at $15 million under the salary cap whenever the season ends, roll it over, baby, because I want them to be active again next offseason.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you think about, whether you think that you could use money and you're going to try and, you know, bring Steph Diggs back or whatever, you know that there's an opening that you would really like to upgrade on your at a certain position group, the rollover option is just fantastic because it gives you even more cushion to be able to do something that a lot of teams, and we know how creative teams get too, just by from year to year, you can look like you're well over the salary cap going into free agency, and within 24 hours, you can restructure some contracts and twerk some things, and next thing you know, you're 20 under.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN, 3667, maybe they're just being smart and waiting till final cuts to see who pops up. I do think that's the case. I just don't think that the players that will be popping up will be very expensive. Like, if there's a player who's not good enough to make a team's 53 that's making $12 million, I don't think the Texans will be claiming that player. I think they'll be letting that player, like, get released and then, like, negotiate with him. I don't see the Texans picking up a big contract that doesn't make a 53-man roster. But perhaps it is in play. I just think it's very unlikely. 9506, I feel like no one being aggressive on Simmons makes me think his film isn't good. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe he's not a fit. Maybe D'Amico doesn't like it. Maybe he loves his safeties. It's probably all of that. All right, 713-780-3776. How real is the Texans-Colts rivalry? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I think the more we address Brian about his rejoins, the bigger kick he gets out of it. So
I
I'm
think
gonna be,
there's something to that.
I will be boycotting discussing rejoins for the remainder of the show.
I'm just letting Brian know right now, you pull Sarah McLaughlin out and all bets are off.
It's like a little baby, you know? They do things that are seeking attention. That's what Brian's doing right now, playing these stats. He's seeking our attention. So how do you get a baby to stop seeking attention? You don't pay him attention.
I'm just processing my grief, Jeremy.
How real do you think the Texans-Colts rivalry is, Blinkers?
I think there's something there. I heard some of the comments, Buckner and other guys coming out of their camp, where I think it's more for them than it is for the Texans. I think they are the biggest rival for the Texans in the division, but I don't look at it the same way. I maybe look at it in the same way that the Colts look at the Texans because they were responsible for keeping them from getting to the playoffs. I look at the fact that a bigger rivalry to me in a lot of ways is the Ravens because they beat you twice last year and they kind of slapped you around. And that's a team that you're going to target to say you want to get revenge on, so you might be a little bit more fired up. There's no doubt you're going to play the Colts twice a year, and that in the division is your biggest rival. But I think that the Texans have rivals that give him more of kind of the red ass of the Ravens. But yeah, it's there. I think it's more for the Colts. I think it's more intense for the Colts than it is for the Texans.
Ain't no way the Ravens view the Texans as rivals.
Well, the Ravens don't view the Texans.
Chance.
I think
but,
the Texans
but isn't
view
that
the
what
Ravens.
A rivalry is, though? Where both teams have hate and disdain for one another.
I think that when you've dominated them for as long, if you dominate them and you win every time, you probably don't look at it the same way as the team that's gotten dominated. But I think the Colts are a rival. I think the Ravens to the Texans are a bigger rival. You're probably right. The Ravens, because they beat them twice last year, they don't look at them as a rival at all.
I don't know if I've ever heard Texans Ravens big rivalry in the AFC. I think that the Ravens look like more big brother to the Texans, especially last year. I think that rivalries in the NFL outside of like the top three or four are extremely overrated. If you get away from like Eagles, Cowboys, or like Giants, Eagles, I feel like the rivalries are pretty overrated in the NFL. It's usually the teams that are the best in the moment. Top two teams in a division, they are rivals. Top two teams in the AFC, they are rivals. Top two teams in the NFC, they are rivals. A Packers-Bears. Like, outside of those rivalries, everything else is just who's good in the moment. So I do think the Texans-Colts rivalry is real now because I do think they're the top two teams in the AFC. Here was the Colts montage. Kay Adams was out at Indy Camp the other day, and here are all the Colts talking about, you know, the Texans rivalry and how much they don't like each other.
Out the gates. You get the Texans. Mm-hmm. How real is this rivalry? What exists there?
No, I definitely think there's some bad blood between the two teams.
It will be amped up for sure.
CJ's been talking a little bit in the offseason. Zaire's been talking a little bit in the offseason.
They don't get the rolling. No more coolness. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to dominate.
Someone is coming into Lucas Oil Stadium. And they're trying to wipe their paws, wipe their feet, you know, right on top of us. And, we can't let that happen.
It's a division opponent. Division games are super important for us.
One of those rivalries you got to look out for.
Ready or not, you better be ready because the NFL season is upon us.
I love that soundbite. Ready or not, you better be ready. They're trying to come into Lucas Oil and wipe their paws all over us. Colts don't like the Texans.
Do you think that the Texans feel that same way about the Colts?
Yeah, I think they do. I don't think there's any love lost there.
Well, maybe that's the case. I just
Stroud was talking about one of their guys on a podcast.
Well, that's obviously what he was talking about. We knew we were going to have some ramifications during the season of things said in podcasts where guys are going to take that and try to use it. But from the standpoint of the Texans, I don't think it's at the same kind of ferocity as these guys with what the things they're saying.
Maybe not. It might not be as bad as what, like, the Colts make it seem. But if all the teams that are on the Texans' schedule, like, the fans would make it the Cowboys. I don't think that there's a whole lot of hate. Because you play the Cowboys once every 4 years. You start playing a divisional opponent 2 times a year, you start to dislike guys. Mm-hmm. You start to, this guy took a little bit of a cheap shot at me, and then he's doing it again 4 weeks later. You start to see some disdain between the two. It's like the Texans and the Jags a decade ago. Remember how much they hated each other? So I think that the division rivalries are a lot stronger within the locker room. Like, as fans, we'll make the Dallas rivalry a big deal. Maybe you start looking up at teams that are above you, like the Ravens, like the Chiefs, and you try to make that a bigger rivalry. But I think within the combat in the arena, I think the division rivalries are the ones where you start to see that hate because they really get to know each other.
Yeah, and that's fair. I look at it kind of like I think the Colts look at the Texans, in that if I'm the Texans, the team that really ticks me off the most is the team that bumped me around twice last year to where I want to get back at them. But you're right. When you're in a division and you know, growing up in the NFC North, knowing you hated all three other teams, and there was, regardless of how good or bad year to year they were, that was a big game every time you played the Bears or the Vikings, and not as much the Lions, but all of them.
Grove says Ravens Steelers definitely rivals. Like, I feel like the AFC South, amongst what you would consider traditional rivals in the NFL, probably has the weakest rivalries of any division. Like the AFC East. Like, you get the Dolphins, the Jets, the Pats, the Bills. There's some solid rivalries there. The AFC North is maybe the best.
Yeah.
Cincy, Baltimore, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. The AFC West, I mean, you know that those Cali teams hate each other. Denver, KC, Vegas, Los Angeles, they fight each other all the time. NFC East is very strong. Philly, New York, Dallas, Washington, the North, like you were saying, that's extremely strong. NFC West, you get people killing each other in the stands. I would say the NFC South, well, I mean, even Atlanta and New Orleans is a pretty good rivalry, but I would say NFC South, AFC South are like the weakest divisions in terms of bad blood, hatred. Although New Orleans, Atlanta's pretty good.
Yeah, the NFC South is the first one that came to my mind of just, and the caliber of teams, but I just don't feel the same kind of rivalries as the NFC East,
no,
the AFC North, and the NFC North.
I think that the biggest rivalry in the NFC South, New Orleans, Atlanta, is bigger than anything in the AFC South, though.
Maybe. Yeah. I can hear it. I just think, because I guess maybe that whole, the NFC South is just such a, to me, it's just such a nothing division.
It is currently. It is currently.
Yeah, but I know that, over the long haul, I know how Saints fans are, and when they're winning, they're pretty strong about their opinions, and that ticks a lot of people in that division off, and that's the target that everybody else in the division has. I just think it goes so deep and so long when you start talking about, Steelers against all the teams in that division.
I'm not arguing that. I'm arguing AFC South versus NFC South. I would put the NFC South, because of Atlanta and New Orleans, over the best rivalry in the AFC South. I think the AFC South is last. 713-780-3776. Renee, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Renee?
Talking about that, this goes refer to that song that the Colts fan came out
Why not? That's hilarious.
What
don't you like about that, Renee?
Hey, there's a song by the Vaughn Brothers. It's called Good Texan. Okay. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of it.
Who'd you say was by?
Ron Brothers?
By the Vaughn Brothers.
All right, we'll look for it.
Ray Vaughn.
Oh, the Vaughn Brothers. Got it.
And what's it called? The Vaughn Brothers? What's it called?
Good Texan.
All right, we'll look it up. We'll look it up, Renee. Appreciate your call. Renee, joining the really good thing. Yeah, how does Renee not like the song? That song's a banger. It's a banger.
Maybe Renee just found the replacement for football time in Texas.
Maybe so. We'll check it out during the break. Blankers saw something today that was said by ESPN that he does not agree with. It involves Verlander. It involves the Astros. What was it? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.